Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Brian, who is with us for our next installment of the Sustainability Report. Welcome back, Brian.
Howdy. Thanks for having me back.
So, what's up these days in the world of sustainability? You've just arrived back here with all kinds of interesting looking equipment.
So we've been kind of having a vision of setting up some aquaponics on the property and just sort of using that as a way to augment how much produce we're producing on site. And so I just came from Oakland, actually, of all places, with an aquaponics system from a company called Kijani Grows that a fellow named Eric Mondu operates in Oakland. He's a really interesting character, and I've been kind of working with him to learn all about aquaponics and how we can make use of it.
Wow. And so the whole system that you just arrived back at the monastery with is his kind of invention. It's his way of working with aquaponics.
Yeah, absolutely. So he is a very interesting guy. I'm pretty sure he's from Kenya. Don't quote me on that, but I know that he goes there frequently and works there, and I'm pretty certain that's his home country.
Okay.
And he came to the United States and got a degree in robotics. So he's very much a computer guy. He grew up on a farm, and he says, you know, I'm the worst farmer ever. But if I let my computer run the farm, then I don't have to worry about it. I just come in and pick up food. And so that's kind of his angle on it, is very much the sustainability of human effort, right? Like, how much of this can I automate? How much can I take myself out of the loop and build robust systems that take care of themselves?
So, okay, so this must be the fellow. I remember we saw a video a little while back where he's got all kinds of automatic things where, I mean, literally these, you know, mechanisms are reading the water level in the plants, and so it will kick them on if they need to be watered, and he can remotely, like, watch the plants and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly the system that I will be struggling to implement for the next week or so as I learn all sorts of new technology, because this system is set up so that it can automatically, it can feed the fish, it can water the plants, it monitors the level, it checks for leaks, it makes sure that everything's flowing correctly, it can send you a tweet if something is clogged. So.
Oh, I love it. So I just realized we should probably back up a step and talk a little bit about what aquaponics is.
So aquaponics is a system of essentially creating a closed cycle. So, you know, in nature, you have these very, very big nutrient cycles that operate in pretty much closed loops, and this is about implementing that on a small level. So you have fishies, and they're hanging out in a tank doing fish things, and in the process of that, they produce waste, and then you take the water with the waste, and you send it up through a system that acts as a biofilter. So it's actually, a big part of it is farming bacteria. So there are two different stages of bacteria that convert fish waste into plant food. And then you take that plant food to a growing bed. In this case, the biofilter and the growing bed are actually the same thing. It's kind of a neat little system in that way. And the plants just soak it right up, and they're sitting in basically a neutral substrate. So in this case, we'll be growing plants in gravel. And there's no soil, so there's no home for root pests, and all of the food is delivered straight to the plants, so they don't really have to spread their roots out very far looking for food, and so you can have a lot of growth in a very small area. So you can plant really densely, and everybody's happy because they're all getting all the nutrients that they need. And then they are providing clean water for the fish to live in.
Oh, my gosh. It really is a closed system. That's amazing. So the thing, what I saw when you were coming in with it, there's sort of a the best thing I can describe it as is, like, you know, the one of those, what are they called, the hand soccer games where you...
Foosball.
Foosball. That's like a foosball table. That's about the size of it.
Mm-hmm.
The best I can kind of describe for people to be able to picture it. But fairly deep. You know, I don't know, what is it, like 18 inches deep, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere right about that.
And how much food will we be able to be growing in there?
You know, I actually I don't know. Eric was talking about that he had produced at least 100 meals for himself out of this in the last, I think, year that it's been operating or something. So,
Wow, that's a lot.
it can be a lot when the system's working really well. And so this is kind of a little demonstration and like to get our minds around it so that we can understand how these nutrient cycles work and see how it can work. And then there are two wonderful directions it goes with that, where we can use sort of water features that we have on site, possibly in larger systems like this. And then also, as we develop sort of the technological skills and know-how from making this system go, then we can apply that to all of the systems on the monastery. So, my vision is a future where somebody can check on the water system, check on how much power is in the solar system's battery, water all of this, all the places on the property that need to be watered, and not have to leave their desk. Because from a sustainability of human effort kind of front, there's a small group of folks here doing a lot to offer practice and to do the work in Africa and whatnot. So anytime we can save somebody, a trip out to try to figure out a problem or try to figure out what's going on somewhere, I think is a big boon.
You know, it's so true, and that also there's so much we all want to be doing in practice. You know, we want to be able to sustain all of what is offered to the Sangha in terms of practice, and also meditate ourselves. And so, yeah, any places where, yeah, you're not having to kind of check on the technical side of things is a boon. Great. So you'll be up here for the next while, kind of experimenting with that, putting it all in place, seeing how it goes, what works, what doesn't work, et cetera.
And probably on the horn to technical support, Eric in this case, quite a fair bit, but it's going to be fun.
You know, I we had a fellow out here recently, a arborist, to help us with some of our trees and, you know, look at some pest issues and that sort of thing. And he saw the swales up on the hill, so we've got this hillside that has some just above the upper parking lot, and it's got some fruit trees and stuff planted. And that's where you dug these huge, I think that's what you're calling them, yeah, swales.
Yes, swales.
Yeah. And he was so excited about the to see those and to hear about the food forest and all that. Just that was going on right here in his own backyard was really exciting for him.
Oh, excellent. That's awesome. He'll be very excited. The other thing that I brought up on this trip is actually some trees to start bulking that area up. They're all nitrogen fixers, so hopefully they'll be producing fertilizer for all of their fruit-producing friends pretty shortly.
So great. Really, really fun. So we have another minute or so if there's anything else that you wanted to throw in before we end. Anything else on the sustainability front?
Well, it's really fun for me because just from the technical skills side of things, because I generally get a rep for being pretty good for computers, but what I really am is just really stubborn, and so I'm willing to do it wrong enough times that eventually, like, just by the law of averages, I have to do it right eventually. And so, when I'm talking to Eric, and he just knows all of this stuff forward and back, and so it's a great learning opportunity for me. But then it's also fun to see how it can intersect with all of the different systems and whatnot. So, learning aquaponics in a smart way can then open up all these avenues to do other things in a smart way. And so for me, that's super excited. And I hope that we can have a corner of the Living Compassion website at some point that tweets what's going on at various places in the property, or there's a little webcam on the seedlings in the greenhouse or something, so everybody can see that they're getting water.
I love it. Oh, and see our little seedlings growing, and yeah, oh, that's really, really fun. That's a great
And
idea.
just see sustainability from start to finish. Here they are as little seedlings. There they are as big trees. And just to make that available to everybody from every step of the process, I think would be super fun.
And you know, again, we always want to do that kind of thing. You know, include people as much as possible in what's going on in the monastery and what's going on in practice. It's just a matter of, yeah, but do we have the human resource to pull it off? And so that's so perfect. So this new system that you're looking into is going to be the thing that does it instead of having to assign another human to it.
Exactly. And then we can all focus on practice.
Exactly. You know, I'm realizing, Brian, we're going to have you on the Thursday radio show, too, since this is centering around learning to love learning. So we'll look into that as well. It's really perfect inspiration for that project.
I am always happy to talk about learning, love learning. That's kind of my bag. I can't be stopped from learning.
I love what you just said, that you're stubborn. I mean, that's what learning is. It's just being willing to hang in there until you see it, until you have the insight. Oh, I see. Got it. There it is.
Yeah, I was just actually describing for somebody the way that I learned ancient Greek when I was in school was just that I would never give up on a problem, and so like I'd encounter some word and spend 3 hours trying to figure out what the heck this word could be, because all the dialects do various things to the language. But then when I finally went to the professor and said I have no idea, he'd go, oh well, it's this, and show it to me, and then I could never forget that. And if you just build up enough situations where you've just put in the skull sweat for so long that when the answer comes, it's just like, oh, relief, and then that just stays with you.
Oh, that's an interesting description of the process. Yeah. Yeah, well, and then what I would guess, too, is all that, as you say, brain sweat that you put into it is leaving this big, wide opening for the, quote, answer, for the insight to come in, and it really does have a place to sit, as you say, once you get it. It's got a home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like all those 3 hours were in vain.
Yeah, to get it back to gardening, I think of it kind of as tilling the soil.
Yeah.
You know, so that when the seed comes ready to grow.
Yep, yep. That's really fun. Well, thanks so much, Brian. I'm sure we'll have you on again soon.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye. And Michael will begin the show.
Okay, great. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my great pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. That was great, Jen.
Wasn't that fun?
That was a lot of fun.
Brian is bringing some really fun stuff to us, to the monastery. You know, we've talked about it a bunch. We've been in, you know, sustainability folks forever, but to have the particular technologies come through that he's bringing is really a fun boost to the whole thing.
Yes, yes, yes. One thing that I was getting out of that is just the open-mindedness that comes from awareness practice.
Yep.
You know, who would have thought that, you know, technology and computers and aquaponics would be at the monastery? And that's what I love about it, because it comes out of left field. But from a place of greater awareness, it's like, wow, we could try this, we could try this.
Yep. Somehow it reminds me of that, I don't know, quote from someone that says, and maybe even being Sherry, I don't know, come to think of it, if you find a spiritual teacher who's consistent, run the other way. And I just, that's what I love about practice, too, is it's
yes.
just, you
yes.
know, it could so easily, you could think, well, I mean, Zen people, I mean, they don't have iPhones. I mean, they're not going to automate things. I mean, they're going to.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with the content. If the process is applicable to ending suffering, sure.
Why
use
not?
That. Use anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And I also loved Brian's comments about just being willing to be, quote, wrong so
yeah.
many times over and over and over, and that persistence. And it just reminds me so much of practice. Just being willing to show up. Okay, I get identified. Oh, fell in that pothole again. Oh, my goodness, that same pothole again?
You know, I was just looking at that, Michael. And it's the same pothole, but we see more about it every time.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
yes.
And if we fall in it, well, I guess we need to do something else. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm really grateful for that and really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Felt like I got a little tutorial in aquaponics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, as we get farther down the pike and he's really putting some of the stuff in place, anyone who's interested, we might be able to pass on some of the actual details of how to do it yourself.
Yes, yes, yes. Very fun.
Yep.
And I have some announcements here.
Okay.
Learn to accept your authenticity at the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything retreat. And this is in late June. It's based on Sherry's book by the same name, and the retreat uses, quote, how we do everything, unquote, as a clue to how we deny ourselves compassionate self-acceptance.
Such a useful process to really see how we're truly doing the same thing everywhere, because it really simplifies things.
Yes. Yes. Yes, because if it's all different content, then I have to think about this content and how is it different from that content. But if what I'm doing is just being difficult with every single bit of content, then that might be an easier solution.
I can just stop being difficult. I mean, that solves
right.
all of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And to me, the way it's described here, you know, how we deny ourselves compassionate self-acceptance, it implies that the authenticity, the compassionate self-acceptance, is who we are. That's the given.
Yep.
And what we need to see is how we deny ourselves that.
Yep. And it's everyone's experience, you know, when they really,
mm-hmm.
really look at it.
Yep.
That's it. We're not creating something. We're not
yes.
becoming authentic. We're
yes.
just letting go everything that's been piled on top of that.
Yes. Yes. Great. And just opened up for registration is the Depression Retreat. That's at the end of July, 24th through 28th. Provides a compassionate and supportive environment in which to explore depression.
They're a really good topic.
Yeah, it's fun. And I would not normally describe myself as a person who has that as an issue. And yet, I do remember reading the depression book and thinking, oh, well, that's useful, and
yep.
that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as you were just talking about, it's not the content, it's the process.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing I was just, as you were saying that, Michael, that so often I've heard Sherry talk about the issue of depression and how she's never met anyone, she's never worked with anyone who had depression who wasn't experiencing self-hatred.
Yes.
And that essentially kind of implying that self-hatred is kind of the genesis of the depression.
Yes.
And it follows that on some level, I mean, because let's face it, at least all those of us in practice, and as far as I can tell, every human on the planet has some level of self-hatred, it follows that on some level, all of us have a level of depressing the life force.
Yes.
As a result of that self-hate.
Yes. Yes.
So whether we say that's my main issue or that's not,
exactly.
It's been there. It's going on
yep.
for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yep. So true, so true. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more and to sign up for any of these retreats.
I have one more, Michael. Can I throw it in?
Oh, please.
That Krista, who for folks who have been around practice for a while, may have done yoga with her. She does yoga at some of our retreats. Has some workshops coming up at Kripalu, which
yes.
is a retreat center in Massachusetts. So you can find out more at their website. Kripalu is spelled Kripalu. It's in Massachusetts, and they're coming up, I think, this month. I'm not sure. But there's two of them. There's one, Yoga for a Better Back, which is open to everyone. And
great.
Then there's a Pelvic Power one that's for women only.
Oh, wow.
And she's an amazing, amazing teacher. She's just a gifted. Her knowledge of the body is very, very deep. And, you know, she's practiced forever. She's been doing awareness practice with us for a long, long time. And so her gift for combining those things is really quite rare.
Yes, and I can speak to that, too. Yes.
What's that? You can attest?
Yeah, I can attest.
Yeah, yeah. So I highly recommend looking into that if you can. Even just get away to Massachusetts for the weekend. It'd be great.
Great, great. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's start talking. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael. It's Jane in London.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good. That's right. I'm very pleased to be here because usually conditioning manages to convince me that sleep's much more important, but not on this occasion.
Oh, good for you. Excellent.
So I wanted to call in because I was looking for a bit of guidance about something I'd seen and maybe what to look out for next.
Okay, great.
So it's Sherry occasionally has mentioned the Indiana Jones movie where he steps off the edge of the cliff and the bridge and trusts that the bridge is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really I'm feeling at the moment like I'm in the process of taking that step. I have got a lot of content going on, and the similar process that's happening with all of it is a sense of overwhelm. And what it's become clear is that the way to practice through this is to stop the planning and scheduling and list making and controlling and to turn to life in each moment for the next thing to do, which is a kind of a huge change to my karmically conditioned patterns of behavior.
I can really, as you describe it, I can exactly picture why that image of stepping off the cliff would come up when you look at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is I'm not quite sure which way around it's happened, but there's also, I'm not sure whether it was egocentric karmic conditioning and all of the emotional reaction to the overwhelm that's been very strong that then helped me to have this kind of awareness that that's what's necessary, or whether ego is actually kicking up because it now sees that that's what I need to do. But what I've got is these moments of kind of clarity that that's the thing to do, and then on the other side is really quite intense emotional reactions, a lot of anger, a lot of kind of fear, sort of crying if I let that kind of thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all okay, because when that's happening, it's almost like I'm able to give that the space and see that it's ego doing its thing.
Uh-huh.
But it's there's a lot of wailing, sort of wailing and flailing going on, and I'm moving between these very kind of two extreme places of this kind of quite intense emotional stuff and then the sense of being right back in the present and just talking to my mentor and being with life. And I think what I'm wondering about is I'm aware that quite often I can have an insight that then becomes overthought about or overanalyzed. And it's really how to move through this quite emotional stage and having just seen this insight and give it the best chance of I guess staying with me in some way without grasping it.
So let me just make sure I'm with you. So you've had a tremendous amount of insight around basically a change in behavior, a huge change in behavior, really.
Yeah.
That could assist this, and you're not sure which came first. It sounds like possibly the ton of overwhelm and a lot of suffering, it sounds like, may have pushed you to a place where, you know, suddenly you're saying, wait, there has to be another way. And then life sort of drops in what the other way might be. And that even with that possibility comes all kind of, you know, that really stirs up the conditioned system as well. And so you're looking at how to continue to just let all of that be, kind of going through the emotional stuff, letting that be what it is, while supporting yourself in remembering the insight that you had and really wanting to keep moving in that behavior change direction.
Yeah, exactly. And not let the whole thing become a story that is bigger than my experience of actually just coming back to the moment and working with the mentor step by step, because there is a tendency to kind of noodle these things after they've happened. So that's
sure.
That's where I am.
Yeah, I mean, it's back to the retreat that Michael was announcing. How you do anything is how you do everything. So if the way ego can get us is in planning and kind of making a program and that sort of thing, then that's what it has to do with the insight too. So the insight comes, now we have to make a program out of that. And
yeah, that's
plan.
It. Yeah. So I in some ways, I don't know even if asking the question is part of the planning, or even if the seeking guidance, it's actually a subtle way of trying to find out what the project is. I'm kind of aware that that might be a possibility as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I hear a little bit of what Brian was talking about in it too, of like, if it is, you know, if asking the question is not taking me in the direction I want to go in, well, then I'll get to find that out. Do you know? But I need to ask the question to find it out. I mean, unless I see, as I'm sort of sitting with that, and maybe I see that ahead of time. Oh, that was just, you know, ego asking the question. But what I hear in it is just a whole lot of willingness to just try it out. Try this out. Try that out. Try this out. And that in that, if we're paying attention, we'll see it all. So if ego is just trying to take it over and is just trying to make a big plan, you know, since you're really paying attention, then you'll get to see how it does that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And what I'm seeing as you say that is there is, it's essentially, I think it's a kind of a pseudo Zen fear of the ego has of somehow losing this thing. You know, it's a step forward. I've started the resistance book, which is brilliant, fantastic. And what I saw very near the beginning of that is one of the ways that I can see that I resist is by turning practice into a self-improvement project with steps on the journey, and there's this idea that that has to be this continuous movement forward as part of practice, and that's resisting where I am in this moment by thinking I always have to have the next step or the next project or see the next thing. And I think that what's happening here to a certain extent is ego's labeling this as, oh, that was a little step forward. You mustn't take a step back now. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of resistance that's sort of coming up just to allowing this insight to be, and the possibility, you know, perish the thought, the possibility that I could completely forget it and actually that would be okay.
Exactly. Truly. I mean, truly, because ultimately what you want, I would guess, is to be okay, right?
Yeah.
So if you could be okay losing the insight, then it wouldn't really matter if you lost the insight.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's funny, we can beat it at its own game in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, and plus, I find it comforting to realize there's no way to lose the insight. Because I'm sure you've had the experience over and over that you have a tremendous insight, and then ego, of course, does whatever it does to take it over, and it does, you know, it takes it over, and you sort of, quote, lose it, but then it comes, cycles back around, and when you see it again the next time, you're seeing it on a deeper level.
Yeah.
So it never did really go away. You never did really lose it.
Yeah. That's, I think, that is true, actually. And I have to say, the exciting thing about this one is, It's most resonant of some things I've kind of seen before, but only when I've been at the monastery. And it was almost like, oh, this is the first time I've seen something this kind of profound outside the monastery. That's so exciting.
That is really exciting.
Yeah, it's because it's almost like at the monastery there's always that intensity of practice. That intensity of focus, and you're willing to go up against the edges of your comfort zone because you know you're in such a, or I am, because I'm in such a safe space. And it's almost like, I think that's part of the reason I'm ringing. This is the first time I've been out in this world going, oh, I'm kind of really at the edges of something here. I've got to ring in.
I've got to
check in.
And I'm sure you've recorded about this, yeah?
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. And done some reflective listening calls and stuff as well. So all of which has been really helpful. So yeah.
Because that's such a great resource, because that's something you can tangibly go back to.
Yes.
You know, to help, you know, remind yourself of what was it that I saw and that sort of thing, to support yourself in, you know, because what I hear in it, I project, it's not even so much wanting to keep the inside or, but just to offer that experience to the being, because it's such a more pleasant way to live, is that in insight, in openness, in, you know, realizing that we're all okay, which to me, every insight is some version of, oh, right, there's nothing wrong. I remember now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just, I mean, it's really, it just seems to be the realization is that the whole point is to engage in that process of being in the conversation with mental, with life on a moment-by-moment basis. So constantly getting that feedback, constantly learning, constantly being there for that dialogue with life in a kind of listening and receiving mode is the way of living. It's not going into ego's idea of planning what should happen next or looking forward. It's knowing that essentially the answer's always here, and more I can be in this moment and in that relationship with life, be it through the mental or how I feel in my body or through the breath, then that's the place that's going to give me everything I need in this moment and the answer to any question I have about what's the next thing to do.
Exactly right. That's really, really well laid out. Yep.
It's fantastic. Okay, Eddie, that's probably my time, but thank you very much for being there.
That was really fun. Thanks for reporting in about that.
Cool. Okay, take care. Thanks very much, Michael, too. Take care. Bye.
You're welcome.
Okay, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jane. You're listening to Open Air. Jen, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Jen.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen. It's Ramita in Charleston.
Hey, Ramita. How are you?
I'm really good. I just got off back home from the retreat.
You were just sprung from the Transcending Resistance retreat, right?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
It's a good one, isn't it?
It was remarkable. I feel like, you know, so many times I go on retreat, and it's changed over the years, but I feel like, you know, okay, after a retreat, now I'm all polished, and I achieved something that I'm going to hold on to for as long as I can.
Uh-huh.
And this time, it just feels like I know how to practice. I know how to come back to where I know how to be present. I know how to return to presence when conditioning drags me off. And it's just, what a gift.
That is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, it sounds like kind of similar to what we were just talking about. Normally, at the end of a retreat, kind of having a batch of content that's really exciting and interesting, and you want to kind of hang on to it. But this time, it sounds like you really got the process of how to do it.
Yep, yep. Bunch of new tools and experience with practicing, shifting from, you know, where conditioning wants to go to coming back. And then having a much larger container to watch conditioning arise and pass away.
Ah, a much larger container to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that sense of a was it the mysterious action of watchful silence, mysterious activity of watchful silence.
Mm.
It's just wonderful.
Mm.
And one of the things that happened, I had the privilege of picking up Sherry and Ashwini when they and giving them a ride to the retreat site.
Uh-huh.
And something happened to me, which happens often. And I know Sherry, I remember Sherry talking at one point about, you know, really wanting us to be spiritual warriors and not to be afraid to interact with her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness, the identity that came up and clutched me, you know, I felt like I couldn't speak, like I was frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So identified with this, you know, wanting to be the right person, wanting to be the right Zen student.
Uh-huh.
And it was just startling to me, and yet was the like the fodder for remarkable insights throughout the retreat.
Oh, that's great. So it's like life gave you this little pre-workshop so you'd have plenty of material to look at during the...
Yeah, like here's some really fresh content.
Oh.
Now apply everything that you learn to this experience and see what happens.
Oh, I love it. That's great. And it sounds like it was really, really useful to have that all happen.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I've never seen so clearly how the identity of being a right person has stifled the spontaneity in my life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, yeah. And so how...
Again, kind of going back to what you started with, it sounds like seeing how that happens. So... probably having seen over the years that happens, but now mm-hmm. getting to see how it happens.
Exactly, exactly. And talk about motivation. I mean, here's our guide, you know, and our teachers and the people, some of the most important people in my world, mm-hmm. and I can't interact with them from a natural place.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is this about?
And I hear a distinct lack of self-hate in it.
Well, that was a huge, huge piece, seeing again how self-hate on one side and fear on the other keeps that identity squashed in place.
Yeah. And that the ability to really look at it squarely requires us to disidentify from the self-hate. Otherwise, we can't see.
Yes. And then as soon as that was loosened up a little bit, cascade after cascade of, oh, this is how that works. Oh, try this. Oh, that's what was going on in that situation. And just, fruitful
yeah,
time.
Really. You know, that's one of those where we can't know. You know, we're in a situation where we feel like, oh, this is awful and I can't believe. And we just, this is exactly what I need right now. We maybe can't see right now why, but, you know, we always do in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because conditioning would have had, you know, like, how can I fix this? And I said, no, it's not about fixing any of it. It's just letting life has given me this opportunity.
Yeah.
Here's a great little place to look. And boy, lots of treasures there.
Oh, gosh. And just right there, that kind of shift in attitude could change our entire world, to have the attitude of, no, life has given me this gift. So to shift from, oh, gosh, I got to fix this, you know, make amends or whatever it is, to, no, let me stop. Life has given me this gift. I'm going to receive that and see what there is for me to see.
Yep.
Yeah. Excellent.
So, yes, very, very, very fruitful, very good. My heart is filled with gratitude and just felt like talking about it and being part of the show tonight and saying thank you to everyone and giving a plug for anyone who might be in the Northeast who has time in September. And if you got the opportunity, the retreat will be offered again, I think September 4th through 8th.
Yeah, I don't have the dates in front of me, but that sounds right. Yeah, and I will definitely get behind that. It's an amazing, amazing retreat. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Jen. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, we were thinking about you guys, so thanks for reporting in and telling us how it went.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Romina.
You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Jen.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. Well, I'm going to have to sign up for that retreat now. I see that I am.
Yes,
the
one. I'm afraid. Yep.
I'm reading the book.
Oh, good.
And something, in one part of it, Sherry talks about people. A kind of a common practice with people is to save to prevent the future they don't want, and then they end up foregoing the things they would enjoy now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In order to prepare for that. And I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
I do it. I've done it for years.
Yep.
And kind of going along with that, kind of connecting the dots to a pattern I see with myself is to, I'm always chasing my life. So it's somewhere.
Uh-huh.
The experience of being alive,
right,
is like somewhere else. Okay, so I was at work, I worked this afternoon, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll feel better when it'll be really nice to get off work and go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, that's when I get,
yep.
You know, it's always a few, maybe it's just a few hours ahead or a few minutes or maybe years.
Yep.
It's never huge.
It's huge to see it, isn't it? Because
yeah.
It's happening on a moment by moment basis.
Mhm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and when my house looks a certain way,
mm-hmm.
when the garden looks a certain way, when I feel a certain way,
mm-hmm.
that's when yeah, it's very good to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize that all as resistance.
Truly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to see, for some reason, it helps to see, it makes me feel better that it's resistance. It's
yeah.
really not me.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Resistance.
Yeah. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, that it's just... I don't know, somehow, oh, that's just resistance. It feels, it doesn't, knowing it's resistance, it doesn't have quite a meaning to it, like it's all my fault.
Yeah.
Or I've lived my life in the wrong way, or I'm not the right person. That all starts to dissolve when I see, oh, no, it's just resistance.
Yeah, and, you know, what you just said is really, really key. It's similar to what we were just talking about with Ramita. That so you have the insight that, oh my goodness, you know, my life is being postponed on a moment by moment basis, sometimes a few minutes at a time, sometimes, you know, years at a time. So you see that, and then what you're meant to do is to go right back unconscious and to take a beating from self-hate. Oh, you've
mm-hmm.
wasted your life and blah, blah, blah. But
mm-hmm.
what you're saying is that when you don't believe the self-hate, you have the insight of realizing, oh my goodness, that's just resistance. That's
mm-hmm.
not me. I'm not doing any of that. And then what I hear in that is then truly in that place, there's nothing wrong. And there,
mm-hmm.
so the fact that that was going on and that process has happened, there's nothing wrong with any of it because we're here now in this moment. And so that's great. That's all we ever wanted.
Mm-hmm. 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 Truly, from the heart, what I want is to appreciate the life I have.
That's
because
right.
it's a great life.
Exactly.
It is. And it's a wonderful life. And I just want to be here for it,
yep.
whatever happens. And then there's a system that just doesn't want me to be here for it
yep.
but and bamboozles me into thinking, well, there's something else you've got to do in order to be here for it. In order to really live fully, you've got to go do this.
Yeah, it's pernicious,
rather than just
isn't it?
Be...
My gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been very powerful
really
until now.
I'm sure you've recorded about it, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
okay, good.
Recorded and listened a lot about it. And I even noticed today, I think I came across this part of the book yesterday, and... So I was thinking about all of that. And today when I was teaching, it's really, I arrive at work and it's like, well, I'll be glad when this is over. And I mean, without even, you know, being aware that that's what's going on, I'll be glad 3 hours from now it'll be over and then I can have my real life kind of thing.
Yep.
And I saw what was going on, and it would just keep coming back to the breath, and I had a good time. You know, it's just, of course, I mean, in the moment, there's nothing wrong, so it was fun.
You know, and I mean, it is, of course, but it's such a huge statement, what you just said.
Yeah.
It is, because exactly as you laid it out, that's what was meant to happen. If you get to work, then the voice goes, oh, I can't wait till, you know, 3 hours from now when it's over and I get my real life, which we don't even really hear. It's under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But then our entire attitude is based on that. Yeah, just get through it, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you see it and you're just here, you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Then that is your life. Every
mm-hmm.
moment is your life. I mean, it's what Sherry always says, where it's all for me. Whether I'm doing the dishes or the laundry, or I'm at work, or I'm in traffic, or, you know, I'm at home, you know, relaxing on my couch with my whatever, it's all for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's just it. Like, gee, I wish my, I can't wait for this to be over. It's like I can't wait for my life to be over.
Exactly.
I'm never here for what it really is, because I've been believing this story of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so, anyway.
And you're right. It's the greatest gift to stop and realize, I have a glorious life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a great life. This is a beautiful life. And to me, the greatest, greatest gift in that is that I have the ability to know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, so many people, you know, most people on the planet have a great life, but don't feel that way, don't know it,
mm-hmm.
aren't
mm-hmm.
present to it.
Right. They're not here for it.
Not here for it.
Yeah. So I am very grateful, and very grateful for my wonderful life and the wonderful practice. And so thank you. I'm going to keep reading that book and seeing more and more about resistance. Because it's pretty much everywhere.
It's pretty much everywhere. And that's fine. You know, if it's everywhere, that's good. As long as we can see it and
mm-hmm.
identify from it and not believe it, then that's okay. It can do whatever it does, and we can see it everywhere. And
that's right. Lots of opportunities.
Lots of opportunities.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Catherine. Take good care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Catherine. I have a great life too, Jen.
You know, I was just thinking, Michael, I do as well. It's the kind of a theme.
It's great, and it's a blessing, and I'm really grateful for it. And practice has given me that perspective.
Yeah, the ability to know that.
Uh-huh. To receive the beauty that is really obviously here.
Oh, gosh. And yet so easily stolen from us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And truly, at least my experience, we have to practice all the time, because when we stop practicing, it's stolen from us in a second.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Conditioning never sleeps.
Conditioning never sleeps. Always something wrong.
Good to have a worthy opponent.
Yeah, truly. We have to stay awake.
Yes.
And aren't we blessed with, you know, a huge sangha of people who keep calling in and, you know, giving their way of talking about it and their insights into it, and amazing folks who are guiding the retreats and coming up with new ways to look at it. And as someone said recently, you know, shutting all the doors to conditioning's exits. Mm-hmm. We're trapping it in.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yep.
We are blessed.
Yep, we are.
And we're blessed now with an important announcement, and then we'll be right back.
Alrighty.
The Year of Deepening Practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers, Jen.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen and Michael. It's Janice from Canada.
Hey, Janice.
Hi.
Hi. This is such a wonderful show, and it even starts with the hydroponics talk and all the little mini talks between you and Michael and everyone calling in. It's just so supportive.
It's all kind of the same thing, isn't it?
All the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted to say that I have followed up taking really good care of myself after the retreat on resistance. And I think I'm just walking around with a grin on my face all the time.
Mm. Wow. That's a good testimonial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like the resistance is, you know, it's kind of sneaking in and it's like, quickly seen and dropped.
Uh-huh. So it's not able to get in under the radar screen the way it normally does.
No, it's really about just being in that garden.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the metaphor in the book being that practice is a garden and we want to have our attention not always on the weeds, so not always on what conditioning is up to, but kind of stepping back and seeing the beauty and the wholeness and the flowers and the color and everything exquisite that happens in the garden instead of getting so focused down in on what resistance is up to.
Yep. Yeah. And those things like, you know, just it was talked about earlier, just keep trying and just being persistent and, you know, over and over and over again. So conditioning would like to say that something was wrong or a mistake. And it's like, no way, this is, I'm just composting this stuff and I'm feeding the garden.
Yep, yep. And that if none of it's you, then, I mean, how could it be a problem? You're not doing it. You're not making it happen. You're not saying those things.
No. Yeah, I'm not saying those things. Yeah. Can just, the words come out or the little voice in the head or something and just catching it is so incredible. Something that sort of happened, I noticed, Jen, is it's like I thought it was pretty slow before, but, man, has it ever slowed things down? It's like it's like a split-frame thing, whatever I'm doing, and just seeing that stuff arising in the instant, in the moment.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah, well, so this is a good example because on the Thursday show, I was telling you about there's an aspect of the Thursday show for those who aren't doing it about looking at taking care of the body. And I had come back from a retreat where I was doing yoga every day at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually just go to a yoga class once a week. I don't have an at-home practice.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the conversation with you and being excited that I was looking at something, it helped, I guess, some questions you had and the direction I went. I was sort of out of pop that I said, oh, I'm going to look into something more nearby. I'm going to do this a little bit more. And last night I found that the recreation center, you know, it's 5 blocks from me, and I don't go there, but they have a 2 mornings a week, they have a 7 o'clock in the morning stretching class. So I went down at 9 o'clock at night and paid for 10 sessions. And this morning, I had my alarm set, and I kind of thought, well, I wonder how much time I need. And I just watched, oh, the alarm went. I had, you know, the conditioning was just trying to come in constantly. Mm. It's like, it's just no problem. I was walking down the street in the rain. Conditioning had been saying, you know, actually, you're going to, you know, I got there 20 minutes early, but it was saying, you're going to be late. You need to take the car. And at every turn, well, no, well, so today I'm just walking, you know, going to see. And it's in this room, and what was changed to, oh, I'll just see, you know, do I need my mat? Do I need this? They do it this way. It was like just, you know, I'm off on my own adventure.
Yep.
It's my little experiment. And it really doesn't matter what conditioning has to say because I'm doing it. And what I really appreciated was as I was doing it, as I was walking there, as I was doing the stretching, you know, breathing in, expanding the lungs, I just kept thinking, oh, this is all the practice. This assists the practice. This healthy body, this is it.
Every piece of it, every piece of it. And, you know, what you're laying out so speaks to why commitments in general are so supportive, because if we stay true to and clear about what the commitment is, then anything that comes up to resist that just simply reveals itself as resistance. And we get to see, oh, there's another form resistance takes. Uh-huh, okay, there's another form. Yep, okay, but what I'm doing is this. And we don't have to, you know, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be stretching today. Nope, we already made that commitment. We're not having that conversation. You know, conditioning just has no choice but to kind of put itself out there in the open in plain sight.
Yeah, it's very exposed.
Very exposed, exactly. Well, that's great, Janice. Thanks for reporting back about that.
I guess there's just something about doing it that way that it feels like time has expanded.
Yeah, it does. What used to feel like, because we weren't there for it, kind of a rapid succession of it getting us starts to really slow down because we're there for it, and we can see each step of the way that it's attempting to come in. Yeah.
Well, I'd sure recommend the retreat if anybody has that chance, and just using the book.
Yeah, and just using the book. The book is fabulous because it really does have quite a bit of kind of hands-on being able to walk through the process. So it's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And we have another caller here, Jen.
Okay, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Oh, just lost them.
We're having a technical challenge, Michael.
I don't know. What I do know is that we have no more callers in the queue right now.
Other than the folks we can't hear, huh?
Yes. So let me give out. This is the first time I've mentioned this phone number in what feels like 5 years, probably.
I know.
The number is toll free 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. And then you'll put in the show code of 15406 pound. And then you can enter your PIN followed by the pound key or just one for guest, followed by the pound key. I was appreciating what Janice was sharing about the commitment that I was hearing and what she was sharing about. I'm just going to the yoga class. And then that conversation is just continually trying to insert itself. And what I was projecting was that commitment of, well, I'm just going to the yoga class. So training, okay. If I'm late, okay. If it's changed rooms, okay. I'm just going to the yoga class.
And, you know, it tries. It's really that image that we use of fishing where, try this, you know, to get her. Okay, well, let me try that. Okay, well, let me try this. Okay, well, let me try.
Yeah.
And, you know, conditioning never sleeps, you know, back to that one. And so it doesn't care, you know. It'll just keep going until they're just wearing us down, until there's one that, oh, yeah, okay, well, that's, okay, true, okay, turn back, go away. But, you know, from the beginning, if we're clear, I really want to do this yoga class, then we can't get gotten so easily. You know,
yes.
We can't get pulled off our track because we're clear on what we want, what our heart wants.
Yes. 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 Yeah, so true. And we have some more callers here.
Great. Excellent. See, Sangha never lets you down.
Sangha never lets us down.
I can hear them.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen and Michael. It's Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hi. I just jumped on since there weren't any callers.
Isn't that fun?
I dialed that in.
Good for you. Hey, I'm a caller. I could call in.
Yeah, exactly. So just calling because I could. And I was reading the new book, and I love it. And what I was getting, of course, I got a lot of things out of it, but one in particular that really was sort of an aha for me was the dynamic nature of everything, of life, and how it changes constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And also how, and then I was listening to something else, and I heard someone say how even things that are coming up from egocentric karmic conditioning in our consciousness could be changing.
Yep.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep. I'm waiting for the end of that thought because I'm right riveted.
And it was so like, I don't know, it was just like, oh, yeah, everything's changing. Like, oh, yeah.
And like, that's something that's reassuring, isn't it?
Somehow what?
Deeply reassuring.
It is. It was a really loving feeling or something like that. You know, just a real peacefulness about it.
Yeah.
And a little bit of sadness about how we're trying so hard not to hold on or to control or
those sort of misguided efforts of the part of us that gets bamboozled by the, because that's conditioning campaign to try to keep things static, keep things the same. And we can guess, not because it actually cares that things are the same, but simply because that's such a perfect setup for suffering. Because things are always in flux, because life is change, if it can convince us that we don't like change and change is uncomfortable and all those things, then we're guaranteed to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and it was just, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so in the insight of seeing, oh, right, everything is constantly changing, there's sort of the sense of, so I don't need to try to not change, you know, not have things change. I don't need to try to control things because I can't anyway.
Yeah, that you can just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to change. It's going to, and to be in that flow of life is really what it's about, to just be in the dynamic nature of it.
Yeah.
And that being in the present moment is what, that's what that is.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I was rereading those statements in the book, just rereading them sort of like in awe of it. Like, wow, yeah. You know, just it kept being more of an aha every time I read it. You know, it was just, it was fun to do that. Yeah. So
it's like every time you read it, you're going to that place.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it just felt good to read it, just to keep reading it. And then I recorded them.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
And, And so it's just, the book is wonderful. And I think I'm on the second time through it. And then rereading the retreat, even though I want to do it, I'm reading it first and then, then taking that on as a 30-day retreat. And then, you know, so it's just good to read it and have those new insights. And I can't wait to go to the retreat.
Yeah. And that time you do it, it deepens. You see more about it. You really, and you practice being in that place. I mean, as you're describing reading those quotes, and kind of having deeper and deeper ahas with it each time you read it, I just get the sense of, you know, truly just practicing the, I don't know how else to describe it, but just being in the place of presence. And in that place of presence, we don't have to do anything because we're in life, we're in the flow of life, and so there's nothing resistance can do because the flow of life is just the flow of life.
Right. Yeah, and what that's arising for me as you say that is just all the ways resistance does arise and how I didn't see all of those things as resistance before.
Yeah.
So now when something comes up like overwhelm or rushing around doing stuff or whatever, it's like, oh, that's resistance too.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, resistance to being in the moment.
Yep. Basic, anything that is, you know, pulling me out of the moment is a form of resistance.
Yeah. So that's really helpful to reread that too.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for jumping in.
Yeah, it was great. I appreciate it.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Renee. Jen, it's about 3 minutes to the hour. Would you like to talk to another caller, or should we wrap it up?
Well, we could talk. I mean, since they were so generous in calling in, we might see what they have to say, huh?
Okay. Let's talk to one more here. Next
Hi,
caller.
Jen. This is Janice from Dallas.
Hey, Janice.
Hey, how are you doing?
Another willing person just to jump in on the fly.
I did. I just jumped in because there weren't callers. Who would have thought?
I know.
I actually, conditioning kept me from calling in. I wanted to call in, and then I was talked out of it somehow.
But here you are.
Here I am. I have something I was looking at, but do we have time for me to?
We have a couple of minutes. Do you want to just at least start in on it, and then?
So. What I was reading the Resistance book, which is wonderful, and just what was occurring to me somehow through reading the book is looking at, so there's a particular content, and I realized the conversation about if I can, you know, after I get it done, then life will be good. Like, once that's done, then I'll be able to relax or be happy, you know, whatever. As resistance, and of course, seeing that when that's going on, up and you know, then I'm dreading doing it, and it's that this particular content is something that I thought I wanted to do, and so I know conditioning has taken it over, and made it unenjoyable, but I'm sort of left in a place of I'm not sure if my authentic being wants to do it, or if my heart wants to do it, or if conditioning has just made it miserable and I really do want to do it. I'm just stuck there.
Yeah. And that first conversation that we had around just experimenting with different things when we were talking to Jane, did anything kind of resonate there with, because we don't, right? I mean, it is hard to know when we're really, when conditioning's really gotten us in its sticky web, it can be tricky to tease out, okay, gosh, is it just making me do this or did I really want to do it and now it's talking me out of it, or have I? But kind of that spirit of inquiry with it of just, well, let me try this for a little while and see how that goes.
Yeah. That resonated. I've been trying to not, I've just been noticing, seeing it, oh, it's that conversation again, but it's not really, it doesn't have anything to do with me doing that particular piece of content. And after I finished doing it, I really loved doing it.
Oh, well,
but yes,
clearly,
I'm going to it with a spirit of inquiry.
Yeah, because when you're, that really is the job one, isn't it, to get out of the conversation, because when you're in that conversation in any way, there will be no clarity about whether this is truly something you want to pursue or not pursue. But when you exit the conversation, then there becomes real choice, clarity to see, oh, you know what, I think I actually don't want to do that. Or, oh, I really do. This is great. I want to keep going with this. But all of it with a sense, of course, of recognizing that it's never going to be the thing, the particular content that I'm looking at, where I'm going to get what I want or have the experience I'm going for. That's always going to happen in the process.
Yeah, and what came to me was, a thought that all my thoughts around it, there's always an I involved. Does that make sense? So it's like I need to decide whether I want to do it or not, but it's the I.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's always going to create the suffering, isn't it?
Yeah.
As long as the I is in the middle of it, it's guaranteed suffering.
So just like do it with life and then, I don't know, see what happens.
See what happens. I mean, the other thing I love playing with that in that circumstance is, okay, well, what if I mean, I'll just use an example. You know, I want to learn to play tennis, right? So, and at first I really want to do that, and then I start to get into it, and then it gets, you know, miserable, and I can't tell, do I not want to do it anymore? Do I, okay, well, what was I going for? Why, in the very beginning, why was I interested in wanting to play tennis? Well, because I thought it would be so much fun.
Yeah.
Right. Well, then let's practice fun as we're doing this experiment of whether or not we're going to keep pursuing tennis. But that every step along the way, whether we actually play tennis or we don't, what we're going to practice is fun.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, because my content that I'm talking about is teaching yoga,
uh-huh.
which I really thought I wanted to do. And it's funny that the content's yoga, you know, and I get all stressed out over it. But
right.
And what I was going for, I believe, in doing that was being present in the moment and centered.
Exactly.
With the body,
exactly.
You know, and noticing the body and the breath.
Yep.
So just practicing that.
So
which is what I really want to do always.
Exactly. We can take a page out of Janice's book and say, I want to be present. That's what I want. That's my commitment. So as I go through this process of exploring whether or not I want to pursue learning to teach yoga, my number one thing is being present. So it's like I'm unwilling to let go being present at any step in order to pursue teaching yoga. You know, I'm unwilling to leave center to go have a conversation with conditioned mind about whether or not I should teach yoga. I'm just going to stay present, and I'm going to do the next thing, and I'm going to do the next thing, and I'm going to do the next thing. And pretty soon what I'll find is either I pursued teaching yoga or I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. That's very, very helpful.
Yeah, it's a fun process.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you to you also, Janice, for jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate
sure.
it.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us, Janice. Jen, I want to thank the one other person who jumped in, who we're not going to get to talk to tonight.
I agree. Thank you. That was very fun, actually.
And thank you for joining us tonight. That was a great privilege and pleasure.
Oh, it's a great pleasure for me as well. Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
All right.
You take care.
Good night.
Okay. Good night.